Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
And welcome to the Friday Special, a podcast by Guitar Nerds. Now, for 2020, the Friday Special series will be running every week. I don't know why I still say this at the start of episodes. It's been running for nearly half a year. Well, over half a year. Anyway, and each week we have a new guest from the world of guitars, amplification, effects, pedals. We've got brands, producers, musicians. I'm your host, Joe Branton. I'm joined this week by my co-host, Matt Knight.
Hello there.
And in fact, Matt, I think you're the only other hosts to join me on any of these. I don't think Jay or Mark Packham have ever joined me, which is wonderful. Because, listener, that is one of the bonuses you get from this show. There's no Mark Packham and there's no Jay Cross, which, you know, what could be better than that? And I'll tell you what could be better than that. This week, we are joined by Sophie Burrell, internet sensation. Hello, Sophie.
Hello. Hiya.
Welcome to the show.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Oh, thank you very much for coming on and joining the podcast.
Hey. My pleasure.
So for listeners, if you're not familiar, I mean, I assume you all obviously are. Sophie Burrell is a fantastic guitarist who's smashed onto the social media guitar scene over the last few years, largely on Instagram and also YouTube, where she has, well, on Instagram, you've got an epic following of like 180,000.
Yeah, as of literally yesterday, 180 was the number.
That's absolutely amazing. And of course on YouTube, where you upload, you know, longer format demos, playthroughs,
right.
Unboxings and just general guitar nerdery as well. You're also painfully young,
painfully. Yeah. I feel old, let me tell you that.
Yeah. Oh, that's good. Okay, that's
old.
Good. Because you're 21? Are you 21 now?
I'm 21, yep, 21.
Yeah,
wow.
Okay.
That's
it. At least you were born before the millennium.
Oh, only just, yeah,
It was when we start, when we were working in a store and you start interviewing people that are like, or, you know, even now when I get CVs through and it's like, I was born in 2004 and you're like,
oh, wow.
Oh, man.
Oh, wow. Oh, that seems weird to me, bad. Even.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I guess, sort of, you know, on the theme of you being a, sort of a very fresh, new, young guitar player, which doesn't mean that, I mean, you've been playing, I guess, for over 10 years now as
long
well.
Long time. Yeah, it will be over 10 years now. Yeah, so guitar is not new to me.
No.
That's been something I was raised with.
Yeah.
Yeah, definitely.
Well, this is it. This is something that I've read about you, I guess, in interviews, is that you say that you've said in the past that the thing that got you into guitar was seeing the movie School of Rock when you were five.
Yeah.
Which was terrible for me because I remember seeing that in the cinema. But
Oh, wow. Oh, no. I saw it on a DVD. I think some friends from Australia brought it over and I literally was 5 years old and I remember watching it and being like, that was the best thing ever.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's a fantastic guitar film. Matt, it's one of the films we've thought about doing a commentary on. Yeah. Cause it has some fantastic guitars, obviously a film and actually the the musical adaptation as well are sponsored by Gibson Guitars. So both the musical adaptation and the film, very, very heavily involved by some absolutely cracking examples of Gibsons.
If you, I would say if you haven't seen the musical, I'd actually put the musical up better than the film.
That's interesting.
Have you seen the musical, Sophie?
I haven't. I would really love to.
You need to.
Yeah.
It's definitely worth it. It's just because, on a slight tangent, what's amazing is all the kids that are in it, they obviously, you know, there's 7 or 6 performances a week. So they go to school at the theatre. Mm-hmm. So they're all like homeschooled, as it were. And then, yeah, obviously they're all like musicians in training.
I follow one of the, you know, the Zach Mooneyhams. His name's Jaden. I can't pronounce his second name. I think he's from Australia. Right. And he is like the coolest kid. Oh, he shreds.
Wait, was he the Flying V kid?
I'm not sure. He might be an Explorer player, actually.
Oh, is it an Explorer player? Right.
Oh, wait, sorry. What do you mean in the movie?
Yeah,
in the movie he plays the Flying V, Zach Mooneyham. Right. Oh, wait, actually, to go back into that, that was the reason, that movie, I was like, I'm going to get that guitar. And I did. I got a Flying V a few years later. I did. Oh.
Wait, was that... Sorry, did you start guitar on a Flying V?
No. That was probably... That was my third guitar. The Flying V was the third guitar I had. I did sell it, though. It was a pain in the ass to sit with.
Yeah, they are, yeah. unless you're playing it the Kinks way, I can't get behind Flying Vs. But, you know, the Kinks way is very cool. I've thought about buying one just to play it, where you have the upper horn going over your shoulder and then you put your arm.
seems a little bit awkward to me, but, you know.
I'm all about making guitar playing look awkward.
I know.
Yeah,
I play guitar incredibly high, Joe.
I can't even get straps that will go high enough for how high I want a guitar.
Around your, like a choker?
I like to have it just, I like to set it with sort of, the kind of the top. That I guess my Adam's apple. Yeah, that's it's not quite there, but it is ridiculous. I'm aware that it's very uncool. Anyway, kind of coming back to you. So I guess the Flying V was kind of the guitar that got you, or at least was it that movie in general?
It was
specifically
the movie.
Yeah.
No, it was the movie. Yeah, definitely.
I guess so. And then you started playing guitar kind of from then. And you?
It was a couple of years later, actually. I think I started playing when I was around 8 or 9. So 3 or 4 years later. 5 is a bit young to stop. No, it's not. But I mean, I probably had the attention span of a fish. Waited a couple of years and started having some lessons.
What was your first guitar? Was it acoustic?
It was nylon string. Three-quarter size nylon string, blue... Governor, it was called. I remember going to get it with my mum, and I was so excited.
I'm still very much into nylon string acoustics and three-quarter size especially. That's cool.
I think that's cool even for
adults.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's probably more of a ukulele, isn't it, really, on a full-size
So how long until you got your first electric?
It was about 6 months. So it wasn't long after that. And then my first electric was a Hodson Jazz Cat, like a Jazzmaster copy. And it was actually really nice. Really nice guitar.
That's quite an unusual first guitar.
It was my guitar teacher's. He sold it to me. Yeah.
He was probably thinking, God, I'm going to get rid of this one now.
So you went for a Jazzmaster, but I guess this is before you'd really developed, like, your own
style. I had no idea.
And,
I had no idea. I was just thrilled to be playing at that point. I was so in love. I mean, I still am, but you know what it's like when you're younger.
Exactly. My first electric guitar was a Hohner Strat with a Floyd Rose copy. Aww. I mean, I still don't know how to do a Floyd Rose today. Goodness knows how I ever. Yeah. So what was your first guitar that was kind of when you'd developed your own style? Because you're very much a shreddy style guitarist, I guess. That's the sort of thing that someone who's not shreddy says, isn't it?
I'd say I'm like mid shred. I'm not all out shred. Yeah, mid shred. It would probably be... I then went on and I had a Les Paul copy, a Sheridan Les Paul in Tobacco Burst. And after that, that was when I got my first PRS. SE. It was an SE Tremonti Signature, and I saved up for it with my lunch money.
You went straight in for a Tremonti, because Tremonti is a big part of your influence as well. And someone
that was, that was probably why, to be honest with you, like, ultimate hero. So I was like, obviously I want this Tremonti Signature. And you know what? I even saved up a bit longer purely just to get the bird inlays.
Oh,
I was like, I'm not getting it unless it has the birds on it. So was probably when I started developing my own sort of style and finding what kind of guitarist I was, like when I had that guitar, I would say.
So with the Tremonti with the bird would be the Tremonti, the SE standard Tremonti.
Yeah, so version. It's like a single cut. Single cut. It was like one of the earlier ones they released. So they were a lot thinner back then, and it doesn't have a tremolo on it. It's just tremolo.
We should keep that tremolo.
People always like bring me up on that, and I know I say it, and every time I still say it. Like, but yeah, it's just, got the.
I mean,
the,
at least you don't, you know, pronounce piezo like an American.
I don't know. Have you watched my recent video?
Oh yeah, no, you pronounced it right. You said piezo.
Piezo.
That's
fine.
Okay. That's fine. It's not piezo.
Yeah, that's the one.
Like get Google Translate to say it for me. I typed it in because I didn't want to butcher it the whole video. Anyway, it's got the wraparound bridge.
Right.
They're great guitars. I mean, I think this is the, you know, and we've talked about it a lot, is those PRS SEs were just a great alternative to like an Epiphone, which for me and Joe, that, you know, especially when we worked in GAC, you know, sort of like 10 years ago, that was really the only kind of guitar that people, it's like,
if you wanted a set neck, where you were going, those SEs. And the thing about those, especially the Tremonti, you've got to think those PRS SE Tremonti, they were very good.
Like, they were so good.
They were good enough to be sort of, you know, designed by, you know, one of the best sort of living guitarist, you know, with him in mind. And you think they're less than £500 sort of off the shelf. It's a lot of guitar for very little money. I kind of think this about SE PRS across the board, because for me, I do find the top end PRSs just a little bit pricier than I think other companies doing very similar things. But I think an SE at the point of SE, it doesn't make them any less wonderful. I just mean price versus what they're doing. But at the SE level, when you think an average SE is coming in at like £799, 800 quid. And do you remember when did you ever see those exotic PRS SEs?
I did.
I mean, that was incredible that they did that large range of wood options still for £800. I do. I've got a lot of time for Korean guitars, and I think those PRS SEs were... It just across the board are fantastic. But yeah, the Tremonti, what a great guitar. What a great guitar to have as your first instrument.
I'm staring at it right now because we're talking about it. Yeah, it's up on my wall. Yeah, I still play it. It's got fat, heavy strings on it right now because it's my like rhythm tracking guitar.
Oh, cool.
And for when I go into drop tunings and stuff like that. But the only thing now is like once you go 24 frets, you don't go back.
Right.
And it's got 22 frets. So I'm like, oh, I haven't got enough room here. So that's why it's my rhythm guitar now.
What would you mean by heavy strings? What gauge do you put on rhythm guitars?
What are they? I think they're 11 to 56.
Okay, that's cool. That's respectable. Fat. I'm into that.
I can't play lead on it though, can I?
Oh no, of course, no.
but you know, I need that tension there for when I'm chugging. Yeah. So, you know,
You say that. I mean, I've got a Rabea baritone, and I texted him. I was like, what strings do you put on yours? Because I think out of the factory, they come with like 12 to 16. Mm-hmm. He's like, I use like 14 to 74. And I was like, oh, okay, yeah, that sounds good. I was like, tuned it up, and I was like, this is impossible.
Wow.
And he's just like playing it as normal. So I think
has the biggest hands, I swear. He must be, I mean, they probably feel like eights for him.
Yeah. I struggle to go with anything. I mean, I use 11s on my Music Man. Or did I change that? But to be honest, I've always just used 10s and I've just never really wanted to change.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but... I just got a new set today through from New Tones of 24 to 100s.
24. Oh, what, for your base six?
Yeah, it's for
base six.
I was like, what the hell is that?
But you know, that's for a base six. But you think Dick Dale? He was using. We discussed this a few weeks ago, Matt. He was using something like 18s.
Yeah,
was it something like that on a Strat? On a Strat.
I guess when you're doing that much tremolo picking, it
yeah, exactly. You don't have to bend.
So yeah. After, I mean, of how much longer was it before? I mean, how long did you have lessons for? I guess
What happened? what happened? So I had half an hour a week for a couple of years, and then I had half an hour a week at school, like with the same teacher. So we just stopped doing the private lessons that I just learned at school, and I was part of this rock school thing, which I later on went to teach at, actually.
Oh, that's cool.
That's cool.
Yeah, so I was kind of having two guitar lessons a week, but they weren't... Like, the half an hour one was the intense one. The rock school was more like learning to play with other musicians. It was like a jam thing, which was really good. Like, without
that's an
that,
important skill to learn, I think.
Absolutely, like... having the group learning situation and learning to play with other musicians, like you can't learn that in one-to-one and it's a completely different ball game. So that was really important. But I would actually say, like, and when people ask, I do say I'm predominantly self-taught because the hours I put in outside of the lessons, which is the way it should be, was where the real progress happened. And then the lessons were like the guidance and the mentoring that I needed to make sure I was on the right track sort of thing.
Yeah.
But yeah.
Sorry, Joe.
No, after you, Matt.
I was going to say, how many... So, I mean, at what point did you just go, I'm going to start... Well, obviously, you always practice at home, but at what point were you putting in, like, hours?
I was putting in ridiculous hours. When I was started secondary school, because, you know, as most creative people, I wasn't very popular. I didn't have loads of friends. And when I came home, I used to play guitar for, like, 5 to 6 hours straight. After school, I'd just sit there with a metronome, like hours after hours. Like, so I've played a few hours, yeah, especially in my teens, you know. And it really is all I do, and it still is. Like, I didn't have any other hobbies, so that was kind of what I always went to. It was my thing, and it still is my thing, I guess.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean that's I think it's that sort of dedication that. You know, it's got you to where you are now and will continue onwards. I think, you know, the interesting thing, having done, you know, taking a bunch of artists on masterclasses and stuff for work, and one guy I've spent a lot of time with is Alex Hutchins. And, you know, he's a phenomenal, you know, like fusion player.
Really great fusion player and also great at drinking.
Yes, he is also
a really good drinking partner.
And, quite often, you know, well, in fact, every masterclass, someone is always like, how do I get as good as you? And he's just like, practice.
Yeah.
You know, I think quite often people just assume there's some sort of magic formula that you can kind of, you can practice like half an hour a week.
No,
and then suddenly you're sort of there.
No, I get that question all the time. And how many hours should I practice a day? And like, you can't put a number on it because it depends on what you're doing in your practice sessions and how productive they are. Yeah, I don't know. It, like, if you sit there just noodling, like, it's not going to be nearly as productive as if you're sat there training and drilling, you know?
Mm. Yeah, exactly.
It doesn't mean to say that noodling isn't important, but it's very important to have like an actual sort of routine in place, I think.
Yeah, absolutely.
I think that, yeah, that's excellent advice. And something that I think people are very susceptible to fall down, just, you know, because you pick up your guitar and you know, kind of replay the things that you know on it every night, which is exactly what I do.
Yeah, does not, I love E-minor pentatonic.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I really like using pedals to cloud the fact that I can't play guitar. Like, that's, but, you know, that's what I tend to do. And I think it's very important, as you say, Sophie, to have like a, I guess, a regime for yourself.
Yeah, definitely.
In order to get where, obviously, where you have got by the age of, you know, 21. after.
Oh, it feels like a lot longer, I promise you.
Oh no, exactly. And I appreciate how almost accidentally condescending that sounds.
Oh no.
Like, oh yes, at the age of 21 being a player. But you know, of course, having, you know, 10 years under your belt is no small feat.
Yeah.
And to kind of have got where you've got by this point is incredibly impressive.
Thank you so much. Not at all.
I guess that kind of, I mean, obviously there's a load of gear stuff that we'll get to, but I guess it opens up the question is like, what point did you go on to social media? You know, Instagram's obviously your main thing. And was it always a drive to kind of get to what you're doing now in terms of 180,000 followers? Or did it just sort of happen over?
Oh, wow. Yeah, that's a very strange one for me. Like, I've been posting on social media probably since I was 14, I would say, 14, 15 maybe. But it actually only became a serious thing last year. I was floating around and not really knowing what I wanted to do. And I saw like the YouTube guitarists like Rabia and, you know, that sort of crowd. And I was like, oh, I really love like what they do and stuff. But I never actually saw myself as being that kind of person because I was very awkward at talking to cameras. Matt, you'll probably remember the first boss video I did.
Yes.
I was like so new to it. And it really does take practice. But over the last year, that's really become like a new thing for me, I guess.
It's practicing as much as playing. I mean, it's the same as, I mean, we haven't gone back and listened to our first podcast, but I'm sure that.
Oh, they're probably terrible.
They are probably terrible. But I mean, at what point did you start seeing like serious traction? Was it really only last year? Because I mean, I think
it was. It was only last year. So my following last year, it was because I remember talking to Diodario about and being really scared because I was like, oh, they might turn me down, sort of thing, like a not want to get involved and stuff. And I was about, I think I was at 25K in February or January last year. So on Instagram, I mean, so it has jumped a lot since then.
Wow, that's incredible.
In a year, really, really big, big jump. Big,
and I guess the more it goes up, the more that you're, I mean, obviously, you know, if anyone who goes on their, you know, your social media, you know, your Instagram now, you can see that production values, you know, and the kind of finding your style is kind of really there now.
It took a while. It really did take a while to sort of find my groove with it. A lot of trial and error.
Yeah, I think
a lot of trial and error.
I think what's great is that you cover a lot of, you know, solos. You kind of note for note that a lot of people hear and have never seen. I guess this is the way I look at it. Some of those solos, I've never seen someone actually play.
Yeah.
You hear them on records all the time, but you've never seen someone play
actually
it.
Play it.
And I think actually watching someone play it, you go, oh, I could probably do that. And I think it gives inspiration to people like me or, you know, sort of bedroom guitarists. It's like, I can certainly learn to do that. And I mean, I'm guessing you learn all of that by ear.
Yeah, 9 times out of 10. I really hate reading tabs. It hurts my eyes and I get awfully confused. So what I usually do is I'll either, and likely like tabs are so unreliable anyway, and you can rarely find tabs for every single song that you want to do. So I don't really bother with that. So what I do is I either learn it like solely from the album audio of the track, or I'll sometimes have a little peek at like other covers just to get a rough idea of, you know, what I'm doing. But I'll see it and I'll go, oh yeah, it's a twiddly, I can do that sort of thing. So like you kind of just, I don't know, I'm a really visual person and I learn well very audio visual in that sense. But anything like sheet music or tab, I can do it, but I don't like doing it.
I guess one thing and this is sort of a question is like, what's your theory like? Because some people who have got, you know, once you understand how to you know, unlock the fretboard as it were, and you know that, you know, there's certain arpeggios or shapes or things that a certain player does, like Mark Tronti, if you're learning one of his solos, you're like, I'm pretty sure he's going to do something similar. So I mean, how much time did you spend on like the theory side of it, or is it all just ear training?
Mm, a bit of a mix because I took it as a GCSE at school and then I studied guitar in college as well. So I had to have theory to a degree.
Mm-hmm.
And I do think theory is really important, but I'd say it's probably 60-40, 40 theory, 60 play.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Honestly, like theory is the one thing I wish I had focused more on.
Yeah.
Because it's just... I just think, you know, it's someone described it as like, it's like learning a language, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
That's your vocabulary. And the more that you know, that even if you're not like a, you know, ridiculously fast player or a jazzer or something like that, that's why jazz always is amazing to me. Cause I'm just like, how do you play over so many changes? It never looks like you're moving.
You play all the wrong notes, Matt. That's
yeah. Play all the wrong notes.
You play all the wrong notes. I promise you that's how to play it.
Yeah. Just play it twice. That's the thing. You play a wrong note, you play it again. It's like you're meant to do it. Should we move on to sort of some more of the gear stuff? So
let's talk about some gear stuff, yeah.
Okay.
I was going to say, what was your first, proper guitar? You would probably say the SE was your first proper guitar.
Yeah.
But what was the first guitar that you sort of had that was quote-unquote expensive, the one that you were like, oh, I've, you know, it's almost, you know, like a dream come true.
Well, my first, it's gonna have to be the PRS, isn't it? I had a Strat in between the PRS SE and then the PRS Custom. There was a Fender Strat in between.
Is this the Sunburst Strat?
This is the Sunburst Strat. Yeah, I've still got it. I use it as my teaching guitar mainly now. It's my standard
tuning.
That's cool.
It's a good all-rounder.
Yeah, I got that for music college because I was like, oh, I love the SE, but one, it's my life. So if anything happened to it, I'd like cry forever.
Right.
And two, I need something that can like do a load of different styles. We were doing a lot of like contemporary, modern, a lot of like funk and pop and stuff like that. So I needed single coils, really, was what it was.
What was the Strat?
It's US Fender. I think it was 2012.
Oh right. The best. Oh, you got the best year. So that would have been custom shop. Well, yeah, because in 2012, Fender changed their standard line. Their standard US models came with custom shop pickups, and it was the only time that they ran with that until, I don't know, what was it, Matt? Like a year ago.
Yeah,
so it was still, so even though obviously they were made until 2018 or so, it's still very much considered the 2012 US mm-hmm. standard. And they were the American made guitars with custom shop pickups, and very much everyone thinks of them as being the best Fender had made in you know, in maybe 20 years. And they obviously, they've changed, got rid of the standard model last year and switched over to the professional, which mm-hmm. now doesn't have custom shop pickups. Has very good pickups. The V, what are they called? V mod pickups? Yeah, but not custom shops. Mm. This is the thing. So as good as those pickups are, they'll never quite be 2012 custom shops. So there what you've go. Got there is an absolute cracker of a Stratocaster. You must be chuffed with it.
Yeah. Yeah, it's my workhorse, that one. It's my workhorse. Mm.
yeah,
well, everyone was like, you need to get a Fender Strat. Like, you could throw those things down the stairs, be all right.
Yeah.
I've seen you with another Strat as well, maybe one that's had pickups removed from it, or certainly looks
the blue one.
Yeah.
Yeah, so that's my other half's guitar. That one is a Japanese Strat, and it's older than me.
Because your other half is a luthier and
he's
a guitar tech.
He's a luthier and a guitar tech. Yep, that's correct. And he, oh my God, our house is just like, we have too many guitars. He's got more than me. He's got way more than me. But,
well, you always have a decent range sort of set behind
you. I have
in
a lot to
videos.
Choose from. Yeah. You know, it's good. But that one, yeah, that's a Japanese Strat from, well, I think that one, oh, he's not with me now, so I can't ask him. But I think it's like 24 years old or something like that.
Cool.
And he got that in a cash converters.
cash converters.
Yeah.
Did he remove the neck and middle pickup from it?
So he makes pickups. So what it was is he was working on some pickups to put in it, and he made it like a hot rail for it. And I just shredded some stuff on it. I think it's got three in it right now. It's across the other side of the room. I think it's got three like hot wheels in it. Cool. I don't know. Yeah.
I always thought it looked great just having like being this Frankenstein strap with everything taken out of it.
Everybody got very confused when I first posted a video with that. They're like, is there?
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role. Like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Pickups there? Or like, sorry, are there pickups there? Or like, yeah.
So what is the, is there a name for the pickup brand that he...
Number 19.
Oh, right. So number 19 pickups are, of course, the pickups that you use anyway. You advertise yourself as an endorsing artist. There you go.
They're made in my attic.
Oh, that's wonderful. That brings that circle to a... yeah. Thing. Oh, cool. Okay. Because I was going to ask you about number 19 pickups.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, so...
I literally watch them being hand wound all the time. I know when the machine is going, I can hear it.
Right.
I hear everything. The workshop is upstairs where he makes guitars, fixes them and makes pickups.
Right.
So our house is noisy. Very noisy.
Yeah, I bet. So I guess coming back round to the PRS, which mm-hmm. you consider your first, or definitely still your best guitar. What is the PRS? What is the?
Oh, it's model? My life, my pride, my joy. No, it's a custom 24 wood library.
Oh, nice. Did you get to? Did you go like to the warehouse to like pick it out?
No. So there's a story behind that. A very, very, very lovely, lovely person actually gave me that guitar because there's no way I could afford that. When I was 16, and are you familiar with the PRS Guitar Owners Worldwide group on Facebook?
Yes.
So I'd been socializing in there for quite a few years. His name is Al, and he kind of approached me and said, "Oh yeah, like this is yours if you want it." And I was like, "Nah, don't play with me like that. That's not funny. It's cruel." And he was like, "No, I'm being serious. I wish someone like I want to do this for someone because I didn't have that kind of support available to me, and I think you'd like really benefit from having such like a decent quality guitar. And I really think you'll love it." And it was legit, and it turned up, and I was like, "Oh my god! Like I can't believe this guy has just sent me a guitar." My playing came so far after that as well, just because of different options. Like I now had a 24 fret, it can do, you know, humbuckers and single coils, like a load of different tones. And I don't know, I just like really felt creatively I went somewhere else after having that guitar in my possession.
Right. I think there's always something to be said about... I know, and it often divides people because you put an expensive guitar up and someone's like, "Oh, I could find a better guitar for £400 or, you know, someone puts a pedal up that they make and they cost £400. Someone's like, "I could do it for parts and £20, mm-hmm. you know, and I think, but there's always something to say. It's like when you've got an expensive guitar, mm-hmm. there is something about it. There is something that goes into it, whether it's...
It's just got soul, man. It's just,
yeah.
Honestly, I haven't played another guitar like that. And people ask me all the time, I don't know if you're going to ask this question, maybe, if I could have any guitar model or a different PRS, what would I get? And I just say like that, but in...
Well, I wasn't going to ask that, but I was going to say, what if you could get any guitar and different...
It would just be that again. It's my favorite, honestly. I have never bonded with a guitar as much as that one. It's just, it's my life.
So cool. I mean, if you had to have something else, or is there something else on the wish list you're like, it won't be as good as the PRS that I've got, but
no,
you know, I want one.
I don't know. No, I just want another one of those.
That must
really
be a wonderful position to be in, to be
completely set. I like feel like I have found what I'm looking for already in that sense. I mean, who goes to say, you know, like my taste might change. I might want a single cut in the following years, but
yeah.
Oh, you know, I just, for now, and well, since I actually got that guitar, I've just known what it is that I like in a guitar.
You recently got to demo PRS semi-hollow.
Yeah, that's right.
With the PSO, which we sort of touched on earlier. How did you find that comparatively? Because that is a PRS that I'm genuinely interested in. Like a semi-hollow PRS that's going to have all that resonance. Sucker for that PSO tone as well.
It's very different to my other one, obviously. Well, piezo and a hollow body being the first things that are different. But the neck profile is chunkier. 22 frets and sounds gorgeous. Sounds really, really gorgeous. But yeah, overall, it's a bit bigger and a bit chunkier than my custom is.
Right.
But it's beautiful. Yeah.
Hollow body PRS was always the guitar that, when I was in high school, that was the guitar I really wanted because Mike Einzinger from Incubus played one.
Mm-hmm.
And that was, and I was just like, that is the guitar I want.
Yeah.
Wow. I remember he had a PRS hollow body. I think it was, I want to say it was green. Might have been green.
Yeah.
I thought he played Music Man.
What, sorry? No, he played Now But Leave for a bit, and then he's moved to. He plays like Vendor Jazz Master and stuff.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
I was
massively remember him as being Albert Lee. I remember him as being the first guy I saw with an Albert Lee sort of thing.
Well, you got to think back to when Make Yourself came out in 1999.
No. I only care about them after they got Ben Kenny.
PRS and a Mesa Boogie. That was it. That's what
that
I wanted.
Was it.
And I did actually get the Mesa Boogie, but I never got the PRS.
Such a loser. Speaking of amplifiers, let's segue neatly into amplifiers. Let's talk about your amplifier setup, because you're obviously, I think, you know, Matt, you sent Sophie some stuff. I've seen some Boss Katanas going on there, but also you use EVH as well.
I do,
EVH
yeah.
amplifiers.
Yep, EVH. So I've got a EVH 100 watt 5150 and then also a baby little EVH 15 watt lunchbox head.
Yeah, those lunchboxes were absolutely fantastic.
Oh my god,
fantastic.
It cranks. It cranks. It got to the point, like last year when I was gigging, I was like, you know what, I'm just going to take the 15 watt for this because I don't want to carry the 100 watt.
Yeah.
So it's convenient.
They were incredible. Just to make to have something that was a 15 watt amplifier be capable of the sort of tones.
It was
that I think
ridiculous.
The amp was,
it's grittier somehow.
Well, exactly.
Grittier, but like, oh my god, the bite in it, and it really cranks.
Well, you kind of, I think of like of 15 watt amps as being like, oh, that's purely, that's going to be where, you know, I'm sitting with like retro amps and clean tones and that sort of boxy sound. That's what a 15 watt amp is for. And when you want to have something loud and aggressive and suitable for anything heavier, obviously you can't use a 15 watt amp.
Yeah.
And they just completely redefined it with that, with that EVH.
They really did.
And they've actually just released a new one.
Have they?
I think the new one came out, I think it came out about this week, actually.
I didn't even see that.
Is that like Series 4 now?
Yeah, this is the 5150 LBX, they are calling it.
5? The are they on 5 one. Then?
I didn't even know about that.
Yeah. It looks great. I mean, I've always loved the EVH. I've always wanted a PV. One of the old PVs that obviously he played.
What, the 5150s?
5150s, yeah.
We've got my other half has a 6505 plus, so we've got kind of the best of both worlds in that sense.
Oh, very cool.
Nice.
Yeah, they are very different tonally, though.
Yeah.
The EVH and a 6505?
Yeah, they are different, but they're both sick.
I think the thing for me was, it was just like, I always liked in the shop playing an amp with loads of gain and sort of chugging on the E string. But then I was just like, I can't play to justify this amount of gain in any way, shape or form. As Joe said, it's just clean amp and as many pedals to mask my pentatonic scales as possible.
No. Pentatonic rock is the way, man.
So I guess, what made you go for the EVH? And I mean, it's great that, because are you running, I'm assuming you're running a 4x12 as well, right?
Yeah, I am.
So still I think in a way they're almost making a comeback. People are just going, mm-hmm. actually, you know what? I want a 100-watt amp and I want a 4x12. And yeah. I think if you can go out there and use it, I think that's amazing. But was that sort of the dream amp?
Honestly, again, like I joined my last band when I was young. I'm not exactly old, am I, but whatever. and I, at this point, it was like I was going from a bedroom guitarist to being on relatively like big stages, so I needed something that could hold its ground, and I didn't know what I needed or wanted. And the other guitarist in my last band was playing EVH and he swore by it, and then I had a go and I played through his EVH and I was like, I'm gonna get one of those. And so I did, like a week later. Yeah.
Oh, it's amazing. It's yes. And it's good that you can still, I mean, obviously not right now given the current situation, but yeah. Go out there and use it. So are you doing band? Are you still doing that band now? Are you doing different
band
stuff?
No. I left that band almost a year ago now. At the moment, I'm songwriting for a couple of different projects. Yeah. So hopefully it'll get used again, you know, after the pandemic.
Yeah,
it's very depressing. It's been almost a whole year since I last played a gig.
It's bad.
I
don't want to think about that.
Oh.
But I guess talking about amplifiers, I guess what do you use for Instagram and YouTube? Like, what's your setup to get your tones there?
I mainly play through. I normally just plug straight into my interface and use plugins purely for the sake of. I live in a flat and I have neighbors. I can't crank my amps to the level.
Of course. Plugins are a totally legitimate way to get great guitar tones.
Exactly. Yeah. So I go through my Focusrite Scarlett into Bias FX 2 or Bias Amp 2. And that's what you're hearing on all my Instagram videos usually.
I'd seen that you did a video for Bias FX 2 and sort of some options for tones that you can mm-hmm. get from that. So you use both Bias Amp and Bias FX.
But not at the same time. Right. It depends on how I'm feeling on the day. I've made my own custom tones with both things, so I kind of just use those.
Oh, cool.
I mean, it's amazing how far plugins have actually... They've come along. I mean, the thing for me, again, I live in a flat, so yeah, I'm always not really cranking my amps. But how do you get over the feel thing? That's always the thing for me. It's like it's the monitors. You know, it's like you play. I'm like, it doesn't feel the same playing through monitors as it does through a cab.
To me, I'm so used to it. If I'm honest with you, it doesn't feel the same. But I have a tasty tone that I gel well with. So I kind of like, I don't have an issue kind of bouncing back off that, but nothing beats being plugged into an 100-watt amp.
I kind of agree with you. I think that's right, Matt. Like, I agree with you, Matt, as well. I haven't found the thing yet, but I think it's just about exactly as Sophie says, it's about finding the right tone. I agree, monitors don't feel like they respond correctly to me.
Yeah.
And I still haven't found the right sound, not on guitar. I think I have on bass with the GT1000, with just like the basic studio amp preamp. I think that's very, very good. But I think it's like that. I think I'm happy with bass now plugging straight into monitors, but with guitar not yet. I think you have to find the right thing in much the same sense as I guess you do with a real world guitar amplifier.
Yeah,
but
it
feels like it's harder for me with a plugin to find that right
thing. It takes
thing.
A lot more tweaking, I would say.
Yeah.
It takes more tweaking.
Which I guess is where Bias FX and Bias Amps are kind of really well suited, because there's so much tweakability on those amplifiers, because you
so
can
many
isolate
options.
You can isolate them to such specific levels, I guess, because you don't just have to look at the it's been a long time since I've used Bias amp actually, but you're not just limited to the front face panel. You can also access the simulations of the preamp valves, the power amp valves, and everything else to really kind of cater a very specific tone.
Definitely.
Yeah, they are it's cool. Bias amps are definitely a very cool thing. I have to say, Matt, I am finding myself using the GT1000 more and more for everything, and relying less on anything that's a plug-in.
I think that's the thing for me, is that does capture a little bit more of the feel for me, like than plugins. But then I haven't used plugins enough, and obviously part of what I'm doing at work, actually trying to record something for the first time in forever, and actually just experimenting in a few different ways, you know, to the best way to record, or, you know, at home. I'm much more of a have all the gear and no idea kind of person.
Amazing.
So, I mean, what else is there in your sort of standard setup if you were going to go out and gig, or, you know, is there some sort of go-to stuff you have?
We haven't talked about pedals at all.
Yeah. My pedal board is relatively simple, actually, to set up. I have a Boss TU3 tuner straight away. God, it's been such a long time since I've looked at my pedal board. what else do I use? I use a Maxon Overdrive. More for tone shaping, to be honest with you. And then I have a TC Electronic Hall of Fame reverb and flashback delay, and then my Boss NS2 noise suppressor. But that literally is it. Like, I'm sometimes a chorus, actually, a Black Label Chorus MXR. Oh, wait, and my MXR Clean Boost, my micro amp.
Oh, yeah, the micro amp. That's an absolute make-gooder right there.
Yeah, it really is.
But it's amazing, really, because, I mean, you know, you're saying you don't use a pedal board very often. I mean, I think to me and Joe especially, that's like, what? How can you not can you not use pedals? But I think,
mainly because I go off plugins, I think.
Yeah, and I think that's the thing. So many people out there, you know, I know Rabir's got a bunch of gear, but, you know, so often he'll do so much through plugins, and I watched his live stream on that. I was talking, you know, we've done stuff with McRocklin and, you know, so much he does on plugins, or even if you watch, you know, the stuff that Nolly does and all of that, it's all, I think so many modern guitarists are in that world. They're, you know, they're on a computer. There's so much you can do. And,
yeah, definitely.
And to be honest, it's the only person who's ever going to know what you used is you, unless you tell someone else. And I think the listeners always like, oh, that's a great tone. It's almost like when you say it was a plugin, everyone's like, oh, it sounds horrible.
Yeah there's a weird sort of stereotype and like stigma around it, I feel like.
But, yeah, I think
same with like Kemper, actually. I was of that opinion until recently.
Right.
But have you
got one, or have you got a Kemper?
No. Maybe in the future, I would say.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think it's definitely interesting, because obviously the Kemper thing came along, but I think people are moving to plugins. I mean, it's interesting to see what people are going to start doing live.
Yeah.
I don't know of anyone who's relying on...
I like that you think there will be live shows again.
There will be live shows again.
I hope there is.
The world will return to normal.
I really hope so.
But it'd be interesting, because I don't know of any guitarists out there right now that are just using plugins.
No, neither do I.
I guess it is possible. I mean, everything is possible.
Yeah.
But it'd be interesting to see how someone would potentially make that work, just going straight into an interface and using plugins, like, because again, you know, recalling presets and all of that stuff as well. But I'm sure you know you're of the thing, if I can have a 4x12 and a 100-watt amp behind me, there's something about sort of the air coming out of a speaker that's going to be way different than the plug-in sound coming out of my monitor.
Yeah, definitely.
But I mean, I think it's good to limit yourself. I think, you know, the problem for me, especially, is I just want too much stuff. And I'm fortunate enough to be in a position where I can buy a bunch of that stuff. but it quite often it holds you back. And I think sometimes, you know, for you, it's just plug in and a guitar and away you go.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, it's a lot. It's just easier as well, isn't it, to just plug straight into your interface, smash on a plug-in, and just whip out your camera and off you go. You're ready to smash it out.
So how many this is a question I've asked a lot of kind of people on YouTube and Instagram recently. How many videos are you ahead?
Oh God, I'm not. actually one, which Matt knows about.
Oh, okay, yeah, right, yeah. Okay.
That's it.
Yeah. Oh, that's nice. Yeah, because I know some people are like, oh yeah, I'm like 3 months ahead, so I can just sort of like,
no way, man. Oh my God. No, I don't know how I'd ever like get on top of that.
But yeah, and you were saying before obviously we started that your main thing is obviously you're doing a lot on social media, but you also teach
full-time
as well.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, so I do one-to-one Skype tuition, and then I also have my Patreon guitar course that I do, where I release pre-recorded lessons every week, including exercises, tutorials on literally everything, lots of music theory, and also like tabs for all of my videos. Okay. I do as well.
That's really cool. You tabs for all the videos as well.
Yeah, so I sit and I tab it all out after I've played it.
Wow, that's very cool.
Yeah.
And that's that's patreon.com/Sophie Burrell.
That's correct. Thank you. Yeah.
And you know, that's $10 a month, listener, for the for your guitar player support category, which will give you access to all of those, which, you know. You know, for guitar nerds listeners, that's only the same as, you know, you have to pay for, you know, just me singing your name at the end of a weekly podcast episode. So that is so much more worth it to actually, you know, learn something rather than just, you know, hear your name. So do that. Do that, listener, if you were thinking about something.
It must be, I guess, like you've got your own style and your own technique and your own way of playing. It must be quite nice to kind of put pen to paper, as it were, and teach other people that same way, and hopefully inspire another young player to do the same thing that
definitely
that you did.
I enjoy like helping people discover what it is they're doing, and I don't know, just inspiring as well, you know.
Yeah, I think that's the great, and I guess that's the great thing about, you know, your Instagram account is you know, all those people there that, you know, want to learn what you're doing and inspiring someone else to, you know, pick up the guitar or even like learn that particular lick or whatever.
Yeah.
And I guess we should sort of maybe round a bit of this out by saying, you know, sort of what's next?
Well, I mean, how can you have something? You were supposed to go to the PRS event, weren't you? Very recently.
Yeah, so I was set to fly out to Maryland to the PRS factory and do like a masterclass and performance at the Experience PRS 2020. Like,
is that like event. A yearly PRS event?
It's every 2 years that they run it, and it was like I think it was the 20th special or something, or the 30th anniversary. It was something crazy.
Right.
Obviously because of COVID that couldn't happen,
mate. That sounds awful. That must have been what an incredible thing.
I've never been to the US before as well.
No.
So I was like really excited and obviously incredibly nervous for it. You know, crazy times. Maybe sometime in the future. But they did it all virtually, and I was still involved in that, which was an honor.
Oh, of course they did. Yeah. So, that's wonderful.
Yeah. I'd never thought I'd see myself on the PRS Guitars YouTube channel, but there we are.
Yeah, that's an amazing thing to get to be a part of.
Yeah.
And have you ventured out to NAMM at all?
No, I would love to. Well, I would so love to. I've never been before. I've only ever been to a handful of guitar shows as well. It's definitely something I need to get more involved in.
Yeah, NAMM is NAMM's a bit crazy.
Yeah,
big. Yeah, it's ridiculous. It's noisy. There's 100,000 people there.
I mean, the last time I saw Matt, actually, we were at a guitar show in Birmingham, and I'm pretty sure like that was already super noisy, wasn't it? It's hard to hear.
I was pointing out the other day how lucky we all were, because that was 2 weeks before the UK lockdown.
Was and it?
Yeah, something like that.
End of February.
And seemingly everyone's okay. I mean, that was a large congregation of people all shaking hands for 2 days, you know.
You know what? It's funny because I was on my way up to the show on a train, and I was on a packed train. Like a train had been cancelled, and so like twice the amount of people were crammed into this one train, and I could hear people coughing, and I messaged my friend and I was like, I swear if I get coronavirus, but it was almost like a joke. And then 2 weeks later I was like, oh my God, like this is really happening.
It was a joke then. I talked to so many brands, because of course at that point in time there were things like because in China obviously everything was shutting down, there were companies not being able to provide certain chips and things like that, especially for the pedal world. This had become an issue already.
Mm-hmm.
And I was talking to people like, oh man, you know, that that's terrible, shaking their hand, moving on to the next stand, you know. It's just
I remember seeing lots of hand sanitizer about, but that was it.
Yeah.
No masks or anything.
No, yeah. Crazy how the world used to be when we could all interact with each other.
I honestly feel a bit strange. Like, I drove out to run an errand today and the roads were really busy and I was like, this feels wrong. Like, why is there so many people about? Like, it's like we're not used to this, the old world that we lived in.
Yeah, that's weird. Yeah, exactly. I really did hope that the apocalypse would be more like, you know, Mad Max or at least Waterworld. But
it's
no,
pathetic.
This is
just, you know, shortages of flour and toilet roll. And that's it. It was literally so bad.
That is it.
At least in the last Mad Max, there was loads of cool guitars and flames.
There were flaming guitars, which was definitely cool.
Maybe not as interesting, but I'm sure everything will return to normal.
I really hope so.
I love your optimism, Matt.
I'm very optimistic.
You are an optimistic man. But that pretty much brings us up to time for this week's episode of the Friday special. It's been wonderful having you on, Sophie. Thanks so much for taking the time.
It's been a great time.
Thank you very much. It's been great to talk about guitars in the pandemic and so.
I'd rather we didn't have to speak about a pandemic, but we are in one, you know. In an ideal situation, it would have just been gear, but...
Yeah, exactly. You can, of course, catch more Guitar Nerds over on our Patreon at patreon.com/guitar nerds, and you can join us on any of the major social platforms with @guitar nerds. And of course, I imagine you do already, listener, but if you don't, then follow Sophie Burrell on, you know, by finding Sophie Burrell 1 on Instagram, or by finding Sophie Burrell on YouTube, and we'll be back next week with more of this guitar nerdery. Farewell.
Bye.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real life store stage. All the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. Because businesses that grow with Shopify. Get a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/work. Shopify.com/work.